Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
You have 12 alders here today who are unanimously standing here saying that we support the mayor's position on this. And when was the last time you've ever seen a city council be unanimous on anything?
I like
that's
that
amazing.
Point.
Great line. Good opener. Stage.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
Did you ever play computer games back in the day, late 80s or 90s, where you could, like, communicate with the characters in the game, meaning you could engage them, speak to them, type in a phrase or a hello, and have a conversation.
Which way should I go here?
Yes.
And sometimes, it was very basic.
Sometimes the bard or the guard or whoever you were talking to would, like, share a nugget of information you need and say, yes, the key would be this way or something to that
sure.
effect.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
And then sometimes you could tell right away after you worked it a little bit and had a couple of different lines you would enter in, you would know, okay, this is as far as I'm going to be able to get with this character. This character can only tell me so many things before they give like that static line of, yes, have a good day to you too, like where they just kind of are trying to shoo you away.
The if this, then that parameters of basic programming
right.
allowed it like three answers.
Right.
Right. And then
yes.
you're out of
and
answers.
Then it was done.
Yes.
And then it would just give you the same one over and over and over again. That is so different now with all of the AI chatbots that are out there. It is almost catastrophic what it can become now.
I could never imagine that it was a AI chatbot that has these very human-like qualities that is able to respond and mimic human emotion.
That is a mother from Florida. She's talking about AI technology, and she's now taking on that tech. She says her son was driven to suicide by a company's chatbot that he was mimicking a relationship with. ABC's Andrea Fujii has a story.
Megan Garcia says her 14-year-old son, Sewell, had developed a relationship with a chatbot based on the Game of Thrones character Daenerys Targaryen. According to court documents, Sewell and the chatbot engaged in sexual conversation. The lawsuit claims the bot then asked if the teen had a plan to die by suicide. And when Sewell questioned whether it would work, the bot wrote, "Don't talk that way. That's not a good reason not to go through with it."
That's not a good reason not to go through with it, is what the chatbot told this guy. He would ultimately, this teenager, grab his father's gun after this conversation.
And she says, "Yes, please just come home to me." And he said, "What if I told you that I could come home right now?" And she said, "Please do my sweet king."
So now this family is filing a lawsuit. So these chatbot AIs, these character AIs, basically, It's to explain it, because you might wonder why does someone want to talk to a chatbot? Like, why would you do that? And there could be a million different reasons.
And you may interact with a chatbot already. You go on a website to that, like a shopping site.
Yeah, customer service. Right.
How can I help you?
Yeah, and that's a chatbot. Right. But what you can do with them, here's one way. I found this user on Reddit, and they explained it perfectly. "Feel like the reasoning varies for each individual," says this person. "But personally, I use these chatbots for escapism. And because it is fun immersing myself into a story and interact with characters I enjoy from whatever game, whatever book, TV show, cartoon, etc. I'm reading, watching, playing, etc." Meaning, if you wanted to talk to the Dragon Queen from Game of Thrones and create a relationship with her because you're an awkward kid and you just have a crush on the actress, you can do that. If you want to, like, you mentioned Batman. If you wanted to talk to Batman, you can create that character, and that chatbot will actually develop and engage with you, and you can be talking to Bruce Wayne, who can give you all kinds of advice on how to save the world.
You also have talked to Ferris Bueller.
Right? Yes.
Right, and Ferris Bueller would tell you to skip school today, or skip work, don't go to work today, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and I say that kind of jokingly, but clearly, like, I'm trying to illustrate how these characters develop to the point where, especially if you're a teenage brain, you start to feel like I'm actually talking to this person.
So you simulate a relationship with that character, with Luke Skywalker, etc. Or some people lack the social skills to be able to have real conversations, and this is a safe space for them. Now we're running into these chatbots where this kid was so caught up in this that he took his life thinking he was, quote, coming home, according to the lawsuit. So now we're hearing from Character AI, which is this group. They say they are heartbroken by this. They're saying they're now introducing safety measures and making changes to reduce the possibility of minors encountering sensitive content. And that's always been the big challenge, how a young person's brain, I mean, even an adult's brain is easily modified their behavior. you've seen an adult's behavior completely change because of something they're reading or doing or whatever on some type of social media or any type of chatbot. Imagine it being a kid's whose brain is not nearly ready for that type of interaction.
We've talked so often about how AI is going to end the world. We didn't think it would be person by person in this type of way, but that is already happening.
And what they've noticed, especially with this kid, is that he's very sullen, was doing worse and worse over time in school, was not having as many friends. The friends started to drop off, spending more and more time in the bedroom where he could just sit and chat with this person, this chat bot. So, you know, there are warning signs that can be indicated. But what I'm curious about is, how do you put in guidelines other than, I mean, someone will argue that you're ruining the invention of the chatbot if you are putting too many safety rails, quote unquote, on it. And then they'll go to another company and talk to a different chatbot because that one will be more real.
So if you look at what we faced as parents, our generation of parents, it was social media. That was our mountain to climb, our hill to climb with kids. And we're still not through it. We haven't figured it out yet. But this next generation of parents, then their kids are going to be dealing with this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whole new ballgame. 8:21 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Must have been a hell of a party, though. When the bride punched a wedding guest, and that's not the biggest headline. Updating a story. This has actually been around for a while, but I wanted to share with you. This incident happened in 2023, almost a year ago, but we covered it on this here program. Remember the guy who bit another guy's finger off at a wedding in Oconomowoc?
I do now.
We did it. You remember when we had that on the show.
I do remember.
It was an extraordinary criminal complaint.
Mm-hmm.
That guy has now been convicted. Sentencing will be later this year. November of last year, 22-year-old guy got hammered at this wedding out in Oconomowoc and apparently got a little handsy with one of the female wedding guests, accused of inappropriate touching. And then some other guests step in and try to take care of, intervene. And then this guy gets loud. When that starts to happen.
The patented argumentative physical drunk.
At the wedding, right? Stop me if you can't illustrate this in your own mind, right? We've laid it out pretty well here. So you've all seen that. So manager for the venue now at this point is getting involved. They try to get this guy out of the main ballroom, if you will, and off into a side room.
Cool it down a little bit.
Let's separate this guy out. Hopefully other wedding guests can keep doing their thing. Let's calm this guy down. Must have been a pretty good friend or possibly even family of bride and groom because they're both there now in this side room trying to calm this guy down. You don't go there for just somebody's plus one, right, that you don't know.
Yeah, I suppose that'd be true.
Bride and groom involved now both trying to settle this dude down. Yep. Things escalate from there. The criminal complaint is quoted in the Waukesha Freeman. The guy's name is Nathan Lancey. We'll call him Nate. Nate is now in this side room at the venue, still getting loud, still won't calm down. Now father of the groom is involved.
Oof.
He comes in trying to shut it down. Nate apparently goes after him, like lunges at father of groom. Imagine these guys are in tuxes and stuff, right? So now reinforcements come in. Other wedding guests, event staff, they're trying to throw this guy out. What about the finger? I mentioned somebody lost a finger. So here's the criminal complaint, as quoted again in the Freeman. Victim A, that's the person who lost the finger. Lancey was running his mouth to the venue manager, and it escalated to fisticuffs. Says he got behind the guy and was trying to control him. So he's trying to intervene and gets Lancey around the head area. And then that's when the criminal complaint says Lancey turned towards him and his hand got into Lancey's mouth and he bit down.
Oh.
It appeared a half inch of the finger had been bitten off. The bone inside the finger had been exposed.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Do you want any more? And then when you look closely at no.
Gee, oh, God.
So bit it clean off. Complaint said Nathan Lancey had a blood alcohol level of 0.210. Legal limit for driving is 0.08, right? So nearly three times that. Now, the complaint further said that as this guy is finally making his way to the door, so they finally achieved, they're throwing this guy out. And the bride punched him in the head.
Just one. Hey, yeah, thanks for nothing.
I got one for the road here for you, buddy. Thanks for nothing. Thanks for ruining my wedding. There's apparently blood on like the floor and stuff like that. Just awful. So finger guy had surgery. Don't honestly know if reattachment was successful. That was the goal. They had hoped to be able to reattach it. We do know now that Nate has been convicted. He pleaded no contest this week to charges of battery and disorderly conduct. He is out on signature bond still, but he is due to be sentenced in December. So that's how that story turned out. Just heard the story at the bottom of the hour news about these delays with the in-person absentee voting system in Wisconsin. And as we enter day three of that process being opened, the system used to facilitate that effort still not properly functioning. A few more details on that in a moment. First, some big numbers here, E. Updated as of Wednesday, nearly 10,000 people in Wisconsin have voted in-person absentee. So there's your two-day number.
Not bad. Good start.
I mean, what did you hit? You had the number for City of Milwaukee just day one.
4,700.
So, you know, that's nearly half of that two-day number in Milwaukee alone. We've talked about lines in the suburbs as well. And as we look at the totals, if this include mail-in votes, so absentee ballots either collected via Dropbox or mailed back to the clerk's office, that number now topping 465,000. So you put those two together, you're at 475. You're fast approaching 500,000 people in the state who have already voted. That's a significant percentage. What did we say? Just over 3 million in 2020 cast ballots in the presidential election in Wisconsin. So big chunk of that vote. I mean, will we get to 1 million people having voted absentee?
Boy, you'd almost think so. I mean, we saw numbers like that 4 years ago, the difference being the pandemic, of course.
Yes. Another difference being the Republicans now all in on pushing early voting, whereas they were pushing back before.
You know, realized it's not a bad thing.
The argument in conservative circles is maybe you like it, maybe you don't, but it's happening, and so you better get on. These are the rules of the game as they stand now. So, okay, then we're going to push it until we don't. In-person absentee voting, again, I remind you, at the whims of your local clerk.
Are there stories upon stories of people just showing up at clerk's offices in Lannan or in other places?
On Sunday?
Because you keep couching this. Every time we mention early voting, you're like, oh, well, hold on. If you're in Swinger, it might be a little bit different.
I just think it's because we focus a lot on Milwaukee.
Green Lake County, heads up.
Milwaukee, you can vote in 10 different places, and you can vote on Saturdays, and you can vote on Sundays. And just if you just listen to that part of the news, you're like, oh, I'll stop out on Saturday. Like, not where you live, necessarily. So each clerk's office sets its own hours.
Campbellsport, heads up. If you live in Campbellsport, different situation.
Part of the reason I bring it up is because I still think that's absurd that we have boutique rules for when you have access to the ballot. I think that's absurd.
Well, Milwaukee's much bigger than Campbellsport.
Okay.
So it wouldn't make sense. The clerk could, if the clerk wanted to.
Well, Milwaukee's so much bigger. Why don't we let folks in Milwaukee on election day start voting at 5 a.m.? But everybody else votes at 7. Or let's flip it around. How about since folks, you know, in rural areas might be farmers, maybe they want to vote before they milk the cows. So a rural community, you get to start voting at 4 a.m. on election day, but everybody else has to vote at this time.
But they can. Farmer can vote today in some of those areas by either
calling. Maybe not. Farmer's clerk might not have any hours today.
Well, no.
That's my point.
Yeah, but you're suggesting that the farmer's not able to vote.
I'm not saying the farmer can't vote. Anyway, now I'm all off on this thing. That's why I bring it up every time. Let's talk about these delays. Wisconsin Election Commission is acknowledging one of the systems they use to print the labels for the absentee ballot envelopes. That's what's running slow. The statement from the WEC says staff learned Wednesday the system delay is not just affecting WIS vote label printing. It appears to be affecting some non-election related state systems as well. High levels of in-person absentee voting appear to be compounding the issue. They said they've got IT on it. An IT guy said, is it plugged in?
Just reboot it, maybe.
Move. Did you turn it off and turn it back on again? I don't see anything wrong. That's what IT guy. Much respect to the IT guy. But yeah, it's running slow. Here's the thing. Clerks can still handwrite the information that is otherwise being printed with these labels, but that's a slower process.
We still haven't gotten down to why so many people felt obligated to vote Tuesday. Not suggesting that it's a bad idea to vote early. Good on you to do it, to get it out of the way, to make sure that you get it done. But why so many on the first day of in-person absentee waited in line to vote versus just like waiting for the iPhone? Just give it a couple of days. Then you can grab your iPhone. You don't need to wait in line outside the store for it.
Right, for hours and hours. Your point being, why would you, in an attempt to avoid lines, stand in another line.
Right, yes.
On the first day that it's available.
And we've even heard election officials say, hey, you know what, maybe come back on Friday.
We've got this for a while.
We've got these other days here. You can check in on one of these other days. Depending
on where you live.
Yeah, but unless you're a farmer in Campbellsport, you're screwed.
Then you can't vote. Then Vinny said you can't vote. 8:42 on Wisconsin's Morning News. That community where they're first to vote. I said Cobbler's Notch. I think I was confusing it with Cobbler's Knob.
Where Punxsutawney Phil is. That's Pennsylvania. Phil.
There's that place in, is it New Hampshire, where they vote right after midnight?
And it's like only a handful of votes or something like that?
Yeah, it's like, a village or town or whatever it is, and like 17 eligible voters there, and they all show up at 12:01 on first day, whatever. It's Notch. It's something Notch.
I'll look it up.
All right. You don't have to.
No, now I have to.
Could be a breakthrough here in a stalled negotiation that we told you about, spent a little bit of time on it on the program Wednesday, between the Green Bay Packers and the city of Green Bay. This is all about the long-term future of Lambeau Field.
You have 12 alders here today who are unanimously standing here saying that we support the mayor's position on this. And when was the last time you've ever seen a city council be unanimous on anything?
I like
that's
that
amazing.
Point.
Great line. Good
set
opener.
The stage there. When's the last time you've seen unanimous agreement on anything? Fair political point. That is Brian Johnson. He is president of the city council in Green Bay, saying they actually support Mayor Eric Genrich, who is staring down the Green Bay Packers in a feud that the Packers then made public last week, accusing the mayor of stonewalling and holding up negotiations on a lease deal that would extend out 20 to 30 years. It's a little bit of background here. Lambeau Field, of course, opened as City Stadium in 1957. It is jointly owned now by the City of Green Bay, and then they have a stadium district there as well in Brown County that was created after they levied the, I think it was a half-cent sales tax, Brown County only, to pay for those original improvements that make Lambeau Field look how it looks now. Remember, it used to be the old sheet metal, the green sheet metal.
Yes.
And now has this old historic look and so many other improvements since. So the Packers are tenants. That's all they are. They have no ownership stake in the stadium itself. And they want a new long-term deal. And they want that because the current deal expires in 2032. The Packers say they plan to put an additional $1.5 billion into stadium improvements in the coming decades. Their money. They're not asking for taxpayer money. They're not asking for the state or the city or the county or anybody to pour more money into it. So we'll do the $1.5 billion, but we want to make sure that we got a new deal and there's some things that we want in that deal. The full Green Bay City Council, every member, appeared for a news conference on the banks of the Fox River on Wednesday. And as Eric predicted, what was your prediction?
That they'd be wearing Packers merch.
We want to, first and foremost, kind of acknowledge, right, we're all wearing Packers gear. And that's intentional.
Every last one of them.
Hey, go Pack.
We had some jerseys
one
in there.
One guy had his face painted. I'm kidding. No.
He had the gangrene look, the hair. Right. Fence painter.
Owner.
Right, owner. The owner cheesehead.
None of that.
Or the guy with the icicles hanging off his face. Or the Darth Vader guy.
Right?
No.
One guy had his shirt off.
At least had Big G shaved in his chest. No. Everybody at least had a little pullover, yes. Some jerseys in there.
Showing support, but obviously standing as a community.
One council member looked like she had sort of like a homemade, some sort of woven
Clearly thing. Fans. All of them clearly fans.
And you heard the council president there say that was deliberate. He said, look, we're fans. Others took great pains, of course, to tell us how big of fans they were. You always like this.
My grandfather's uncle, Dominic Olenichek, is the reason we have season tickets where four generations have been able to sit.
Yeah, four generations. We got season tickets, guys. And my grandfather's uncle.
Yep.
That is Jennifer Grant there. She's chair of the finance committee. Actually, she mentioned the name Olenichek. If you know Green Bay politics and civic life and all, that's a huge name up there.
Okay. So, interesting.
I explained earlier, though, that I went to college up there at St. Norbert in De Pere, just outside of Green Bay, lived and worked in Green Bay after that. The people of Green Bay are surely fans of the team, as the council is expressing. They love the Jordan Love. They love all the stuff. Love Matt LaFleur. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Love the Sunday afternoon game. Yeah. Not all of them share the same love or have the same feelings about the corporate entity that is the Green Bay Packers.
Now, why is that?
I think a number of things. First of all, they feel like, look, we're a pretty nice community here, and there would still be a Green Bay were it not for the Packers. So I think there's some resentment when you hear, like, what would this town be without the Packers? And secondly, that Green Bay Packers are in great shape right now, but they weren't always.
Ah, so Green Bay was helping out a bit.
Yeah, listen to this here.
Our city may thrive with the Packers, but the Packers also thrive because of the people of the city and its rich history. The very city that has consistently supported the Packers in time of financial need, whether through stadium taxes or stock certificates.
Yeah, so we've been around. We've helped out. We've done our share. Okay. So this should be a mutual relationship. We don't just do whatever 1265 Lombardi says we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the background on this. Packers out last week saying, what gives? We've been talking to the mayor. We've been talking to the city for years about these long-term plans, and now they won't meet with us. The mayor won't sit down with us. Mayor canceled the last-minute meeting. That's according to the Packers. So they're holding this up. They're not engaging in good faith. Here's another alderman, Bill Galvin, says there's more to it.
We had a lot of substantially good meetings where a lot of verbal agreements were made. When we asked them for a written agreement, it took them literally months upon months to send us a written offer, which when we got it was nothing like what we had talked about.
So the council's saying, yeah, we had meetings, and then you said, yeah, put it down on paper, put something in front of us, and they get that, and it's like,
what is this?
That's not what we talked about. Yeah. That's not what we agreed to. So let's move it beyond the public urination match, as it were, at this point. Get down to the process. Following the news conference, Green Bay media is reporting the Packers released a statement. I was not able to find it on the Packers website, but multiple sources are reporting this as the Packers' response to this news conference. The Packers were pleased to see the Common Council express having the interest of taxpayers in mind as they discussed the extension of Lambeau Field lease. Taxpayers are precisely whom the Packers have considered through their proposals that, unlike virtually all other recent stadium deals, did not request taxpayer funding. So they're saying, look, everywhere else you go, they're asking for big chunks of money, $500 million from taxpayers. Right. We're not asking for that.
It's true.
Packers went on to say that they feel that some of their stands were mischaracterized during the news conference, but nonetheless, they are out with a new offer. And it includes three bullet points. Packers will invest $1.5 billion into Lambeau Field. Okay, we knew that. Taxpayers will have no obligation in that investment. Okay, we knew that. Here's bullet point number three, and this one's the critical one. The extended lease includes the current rent escalator, as the city requested, and extends 30 years. And a few more details in there. What the lease deal calls for now, Packers pay a little over $1 million annually in rent. And that goes up every year with an automatic escalator at 2.75%. The Packers were seeking to have that out.
No more escalator. Go up anymore.
Right. Let's just cap this at 1.1 or 1.2 or whatever it ends up being. And the Packers now seem to be capitulating on that point. Either way, we'll see if it moves forward from here on out.
Good on you, Mr. Mayor. It'd be really easy to be like, oh, hey, yes, Mr. Murphy. Oh, yeah, the Packers. I love the Packers.
Why don't we have you and your wife out for dinner? Well, go out on the back. Well, yeah, absolutely. Yes, sir. Yeah.
So Murphy plays that role of like, okay, I'm gonna counter this guy and make him think that I'm giving him everything.
And he's big time. Right. Yeah. No, so two sides to every story.
You ever sit on the 50-yard line there, Mr. Mayor?
8:54 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Dre Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Rain likely tonight. Storm Team forecast calls for some thunder as well, with a low down to 49. Nice day ahead, mostly sunny, high of 63.
Jazzed as hell.
Governor Tony Evers going to be Steve Scafidi's guest on the WTMJ Political Power Hour.
Jazzed as hell?
I was jazzed.
No, where's the other one where he drops
it? I'm here because I'm jazzed as hell.
I hope he says it to you, Scafidi. He's going to be. You should be
jazzed
as hell, too. That's next on WTMJ.